It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley are here. They've got the scoop. The next edition of Windows, Windows 9, next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, episode 345, recorded January 15th, 2014. Expired. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code WINDOWS1. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code WINDOWS, and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers your Microsoft needs. Paul Theroux is here from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley from the ZDNet blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, on our new time, Wednesday mornings, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello.
We have 3 IT types from the Mayo Clinic here, just in case.
How can you tell that? Is that something that you ascertained?
They're all wearing or lovely jackets. No. They just...
Pocket protectors?
Yes. We're here from the Mayo Clinic. And you have any problems?
Yeah. Yes, you are.
Actually, you know, it's too bad you're in IT.
Wow.
Because I really need a flu shot. You know that 17 people have died in the San Francisco Bay Area from this flu outbreak in the last 2 weeks? That's a lot, it seems to me.
Yeah,
strikes me. Many of them in their 20s. This is much like the pandemic of 1918, where it hit younger people. And older people.
Is it really like the pandemic?
Well, I don't know. This is how it started then. This is the swine flu, yeah. H1N1. And the good news is, a little public service announcement, this year's shot is very effective. So we're calling a traveling nurse and right now. And we're going to all, I'm going to give the whole staff shots.
Wow.
Seriously.
No, I believe you.
It's, you know, they think it's a good move for a business. We got 25 employees. Any one of them gets the flu, this whole operation could go downhill.
Yep. It's like I used to work in banks, and that's what it was like. One person would get sick, and then the whole place would go down. Like, house of sticks.
So we're calling out right now. So if suddenly a woman in crisp, starched white outfit with high heels and a giant nurse hat comes in, you'll forgive me if I swoon.
The inoculator.
Hello, I'm the inoculator.
I'll be back.
So you guys have done a lot of really good reporting. I saw Paul Theroux's story. You got a scoop. Windows threshold, Paul Theroux says, will be called Windows 9. And
I hate to sound like I'm the source of that information. That's what I was told
by somebody else.
Yeah,
but not Joshua Topolsky.
I mean, I'm not like a swami, you know. Like
no, but you have inside. I'm presuming these are inside sources.
Number 9. I don't know.
Well, no, but that's legit because, as you point out, it's a little bit of distancing yourself from 8.
Yes.
Lot of distancing yourself from 8.
Nice. Yeah, and it will be April 2015. You say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mary Jo, your sources concur.
Yeah, I've been asking around after those two factoids, not factoids, sorry, facts.
Thank you for getting that facts. Right. That's a pet peeve of mine.
Paul always corrects me when I say factoids
are false.
Factoids are lies, Mary Jo.
I think of factoids as you do, Mary Jo, as a little fact, but no, that's a factet.
I know, not that. Yeah. Correct. Factet.
I'm not sure that's true, but I like that word.
I'm coining it today.
Yeah, and I'm hearing, like Paul is too, like this is what the thinking is right now, but doesn't mean it's absolutely set in stone.
Well, they'd be right. Foolish at this date to say, we'll be shipping. You know, everybody knows you can't say April.
Right.
That could
it's
be
like
a target.
A goal.
Yeah.
Target date. Yeah.
Well, that said, I think they are, in fact, going to say that publicly soon. But, yeah, that's right. Like she said, that's the plan, not a hard, fast rule.
So you think this is they're going to go public with this soon?
Yeah. Yeah. What I heard was that they were going to use Build 2014 as the launch of their vision for Windows 9, which is something they never did during the Sinofsky regime, if you will.
Right.
Although, you know, I have to say, some people have pointed out to me, and I can't rectify these two claims, but some people did point out to me that this isn't much different from Sinofsky coming out 1 year before the release of Windows 7 or
right.
1 year before the release of Windows 8 and saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. Because this release is in fact going to take just a year, just like those releases from the time of public announcement.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fair comment. But what I was told was that the style of announcement they were going to make was something that Sinofsky refused to do. And I think we talked about this earlier, but this notion that what Sinofsky did was sort of a reaction to the way that the Windows team was before, where they made a lot of big, bold pronouncements, and then in the case of Windows Vista especially, were unable to live up to them.
Right.
You know, and they wanted to avoid that. And so I think they skewed really far in the opposite direction. And hey, we've talked about this, you know, this notion that maybe there's a happy middle ground. And we'll see if it's closer to Longhorn or if it's somewhere in the middle. But something that wasn't done during the Sinofsky era. And I think that just even the language of vision suggests not this is what we're going to deliver, but rather this is what we're trying to achieve. It's more than just here's the actual features we plan to deliver. It's perhaps this is part of a bigger scheme, and here's this, you know, here's how it fits into this other, you know, this other bigger plan,
yeah.
Which is definitely something they didn't do,
yeah,
under Sinofsky.
Yeah, I'm curious what vision means, right? Because I've heard that same thing, that they're going to talk vision for Threshold at Build 2014. And, you know, that could mean something really high level, like Threshold's the next major wave of Windows, and we're going to start rolling it out next year, and that's it. Or it could mean...
Can I ask you a question, Mary Jo?
Yes.
Well, it looks like you are a web ad. On
for Ally Bank. This is something new with Skype. They're giving you Allied Bank ads.
That's odd. Why is that?
Don't pay no attention to the...
Pay no attention to
the woman behind the Ally
So the banner
Bank
ad that is Mary Jo.
We'll call you back and see what we can do here. You might have to reboot again.
Okay.
Oh, man.
So, Paul, just while we're doing that with Mary Jo, let's talk a little bit about what Windows 9 will be. I mean, you've already said, and I think Mary Jo's too, that there'll be a start menu in Windows 9.
Well, actually, yeah, I had to go back and look at my notes to determine when I was previously told that would occur. It is, in fact, Windows 9. You know, a lot of people were wondering if this is something that will happen in this update 1 that's coming for Windows 8.1, also due in April, by the way. And actually, I was told, you know, some time ago that the start menu would return in some form in the Threshold release. And so that would be Windows 9. So maybe it's a little further off than we thought.
Why don't they call this Windows 9 the white flag? Windows 9.
Because they're responding to customer feedback, Leo. They're not retreating.
Oh.
It's really all about positioning. You know, someone made a crack on Twitter, I think, that, you know, this is like re-releasing Windows 7 and calling it Windows 9. And I don't see it as that at all.
No.
In fact, one of the key tenets of this release is going to be a maturation of that Metro user experience, right? And so we're going to see a second generation version of that. And I think one of the nice things that will happen, you know, over the course of the update 1 release, what maybe if there's an update 2, 3, whatever before then, and then finally in Windows 9 as well, is that they will consolidate this look and feel across the different platforms that support it, you know, Windows, Windows Phone, Xbox, and make it more consistent where it makes sense for those things to be consistent. So there's some weird differences now. There, you know, will be for some time, I'm sure. But
you also said that they would do a Metro apps in a windowed.
Windowed, yeah, on the desktop, also in Threshold. Yeah. So That makes sense within the context of that maturation of Metro, right? That Metro right now is not a great experience on a desktop computer. It just isn't. It's not that great of an experience on a laptop computer either.
No, you know, it's a tablet interface.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the thing, you know, I guess the only thing I would say to people, because, you know, Windows 8 has garnered very strong reactions from people, and it's understandable, but I think it's important to consider what the alternative was, right? If Microsoft had created this tablet UI for a new operating system outside of Windows Phone and outside of Windows and had marketed that thing, the acceptance would have been next to nothing. It would have done even worse than what they did by jamming it down Windows users' throats in a way by putting it in Windows 8. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can all complain about the way they did it, and it's understandable, and I've often called it a Frankenstein's monster and all that kind of thing, but I just think that the alternative was worse for Microsoft, that to get this thing to, not just to get it to market quickly, but to get it into users' hands quickly, because of their unique position with that many users on the PC side, they had to add it to the PC yeah. OS, because it would have been ignored otherwise. No right. one was clamoring for a new mobile OS.
Did it cost Ballmer his job?
No. It's
actually not. No. Okay. I was going to say, that's not a horrible question, but yeah.
Did
no.
Windows RT, did the Surface RT cost no. Steve his job? No. The $900 million write-down? No.
Yeah, they wrote a lot of things down. Look at the Aquantive
Overture,
write-down.
Overture. Yeah, Aquantive. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Aquantive, yeah.
So, okay. Because, I mean, I think there is a legitimate debate.
Well, did those things add up?
And right.
Yeah.
Right.
No. But I think there's a legitimate debate over whether Windows 8.1 can be called a failure at this point. And
yeah. Well, you know what, though? Think about it this way. BlackBerry didn't have anything to fall back on, right?
Yeah, that's a good
market
point.
The market that BlackBerry had that they could fall back on was corporate users, government users. And they had they migrated to iPhone.
They bailed.
And Android.
Yeah.
So there was no fallback. And so when they released their new system, and no one bought it, it was over. That was the end of the road. There was no other thing that kind of supported them. Apple has a solid kind of PC business, but it was never more than 5-10% of the entire market. Yeah. They were never going to take the world by storm with the Mac. And so when you make a new mobile system, you know, in that company, you do make it something new. You know, likewise, Google doesn't have a PC OS to fall back on. And so they do a new mobile system. It's a new mobile system. I mean, I think they stole the Apple playbook and copied it word for word, but whatever they did, and they made Android.
Right.
So Microsoft approaches this from a different position. They have over 1 billion users on PCs. That market may be shrinking, but slowly, and those people are still there using PCs every day. And here's this potential. It would be so much worse for Microsoft to release something new that no one bought, like Zune, except it has the Windows name on it, than if they just added it to made it part of Windows, right?
Right.
And I think that's just to sort of explain it. I agree it could have been better, and I agree it will be better in the future. But I think that sort of I think it makes sense on some level. You know what they did.
Like you're saying they had to do Metro the way they did it, right?
Yeah, we've talked about this before, and I think that's a fair.
They didn't have a choice.
Yeah, that's a fair thing to say.
Well, unless they didn't want to be successful, you know.
Right.
I mean, the world is littered with Microsoft products that went nowhere fast. I mean,
but Windows is too important to let that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
I always feel like the mistake wasn't so much Metro as it was assuming everything was going touch.
Yeah.
And
they
may
have bet on the bad horse. I agree.
Right. And that the assumption was. There'd be a very rapid influx of hardware that was touch-enabled, and everybody would suddenly go to that, and that the desktop would disappear much quicker than the desktop, meaning desktop form factor, would go away quicker than it looks like it's going to go away.
And the only reason I bring this up is in the context of Windows 9 and Threshold, mm-hmm. and what the message is going to be at build.
Yeah. I think that Mary Jo had a story probably a couple of months ago now that sort of hinted at SKUs for the next version of Windows and where they might go with those things. And I think it's pretty clear that just from the experience of Windows 8 in particular, that the correct route is a version of Windows where that stuff is either de-emphasized or non-existent
for business,
for professional users.
Yeah.
Business users. And then a version where the Windows desktop stuff is also likewise not there anymore. And that's for tablets. They couldn't have released that in 2012, you know, at least the tablet part of it, you know, and I think that's the thing. So they get in a weird situation where the people who do like Windows the way it is and like the Windows and all that stuff are really mad because they can't escape the charms and all the other Metro nonsense. And then on the flip side, you've got these people who are like, I really do want to use this thing on a tablet. I like the interface, but it keeps throwing me the desktop to do certain things. And I can't touch the little buttons with my fingers. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of the perfect OS. I mean, I don't know what anyone's complaining about it. Served all needs equally. But yeah, so I think they'll fix it. A1 was a nice step in that direction. A2, if they do that or whatever, however they do it, update one.
You make an important point about runway. I mean, BlackBerry had no runway.
Yeah.
And Microsoft clearly has a lot of runway. I'm reading the, and I think you read this, the Brad Stone book about Jeff Bezos, the Everything store. And Bezos made horrendous errors all along the way. I mean, company bets, you know, ending bets, but they had runway. They'd done some things right. They borrowed $1 billion ahead of time. So they
said, I'm not saying this in the context of Microsoft. Someone sent around, I think it was a PC Mag or PC World story about like the top 10 PC duds of all time, and there are at least three Apple/Next computers in there.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I'm not doing that to criticize Apple. I mean,
no, there's no perfect company.
The glass half full version of this story is you can't succeed if you don't make these risks.
Right.
And they don't always pay off. Right. You know, if you're not making risks and failing sometimes, you're never going to succeed really anyway. So Windows 8 was a huge risk, and I would argue it didn't pay off in the short term, but the question remains whether, you know, it will pay off in the long term.
And yeah, again, I'm going to be curious at Build how much they say about this whole Metro 2 thing and what it really means and how deep they go, if they go deep at all, about you're going to be able to have Metro apps on your desktop with Threshold. That's the rumor anyway. I don't know how much of that they're going to say or disclose at this point, because Paul also had, there's going to be three milestones supposedly before it RTMs, and we don't know when those are going to be, but usually that's when they'd start disclosing specifics about the UI and about API changes and things like that.
It would be crazy at a show like Build not to have some message that involves you're safe targeting Metro today because things pay off in, I don't know if update one has new APIs, probably not, but whatever, say update one, update two going forward, and then eventually Windows 9. You know, that this is the safe bet because this is the platform that will be part of, you know, Windows on the tablet, Windows on the phone, Windows on the desktop too, you know, whatever it is. They need to have that kind of, continuity.
Guarantee.
Yeah, they can't start over again. They can't come up, you know, Metro 2 can't be, we're dropping C# and Visual Basic. It's going to be all Visual F# now or whatever.
No.
You know, I mean, they can't go off in some completely different direction. They can't change the APIs yet again. They can't, or at least, you know, restart them yet again. There needs to be that continuity. So I hope they.
Right.
I hope there's some of that. But I haven't
You know what I wonder, because some developers have been asking me this. They're like, okay, we're going to have Build now, right, in April. And then we don't even have the bits yet for Threshold, and we're not going to get a drop there for Threshold. It's too early. They haven't even started building it yet, supposedly. So
is that unusual? Wouldn't they be, I mean, don't they start usually sooner?
They've been doing planning, right, since Windows 8.
Year,
so they do a big planning phase on Windows, and then they start building, and then they have usually a private drop, or a developer drop, and then a public drop sometimes. And then the RTM. But, you know, the question is, are they going to have another developer conference this year? Like maybe in the fall? Because right now, this is the developer show for them, where you would typically have a disclosure about something like Threshold. You'd think Build. But since the bits aren't out, is there going to be another one this year? No, maybe not another Build, but like something like, almost like a PDC.
I mean, I think that's a great idea, right? I mean, have a second Build conference in October or whatever that's based around beta and where we finally get code and the first look at the APIs. And sure, why not? I think that's a tremendous idea. This Build that they're doing in April, I was told, was going to be focused on Windows Phone and Xbox. And in some ways, that might turn off a certain crowd of developers, you know. Other than the fact that they're going to do this threshold vision thing there, which I think is a big deal for everyone because it kind of speaks to the entire ecosystem. So if you think about them focusing on those two products in the spring and then Windows in the fall, I mean, I think that would be fine. They should announce it today.
I mean, yeah, the point is the thing that people are likely to get at Build is Windows Phone 8.1 in some form, right? Maybe the RTM version of that. And Windows 8.1 Update 1, which is the complement to that phone release. So people are going to get some new bits at the conference. They're just not going to be Windows 9. Right.
Yeah, so Windows Phone 8.1 will obviously have new developer tools and APIs and all that. What about Update 1? Do you know anything about that? Has anyone ever said anything about Update 1 triggering new APIs or is that in there?
Originally, when I heard about it, I heard that Update 1 was meant to kind of bring people closer together in terms of what the APIs on Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1 share in common. So I don't think it's going to be any gigantic API changes or any gigantic UI changes on either side, but more like bringing things into closer alignment along that path to having a unification of the platform. But I don't know feature-wise on 8.1 Update 1 what there's supposed to be. You know, on Windows Phone 8.1, we know there's a lot of big things coming, right? Notification Center, Cortana, the Siri-like thing is coming. So there's a lot of big changes coming on phone, but we just don't know what the changes are going to look like on the 8.1 update one.
Reminds me, there hasn't been a stink about this from developers, right? Remember one of the big problems with Windows Phone 8 was that it came out and basically no one got access to the APIs, the SDK beforehand. I mean, I think a small group did. And there was some complaining about the communication on that. They have said nothing about Windows Phone 8.1, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's some small developer group that has access to the SDK now, but if that thing does ship at Build, you know, around that time frame, and I don't know what ship means exactly, but presumably gets sent out for, you know, existing phones and they get it over the next 6 months. I mean, maybe that's the point. There's no rush because, you know, the new devices would have to ship and
it
would be a fairly small audience, I guess.
Right. And now they have that plan that they put in place with the last update on Windows Phone, where if you are in the developer program, as soon as Microsoft RTMs the bits, you could get them immediately. So you don't have to wait and wait and wait. So maybe they're going to say, okay, RTM is right around the time of Build. You guys can go get the bits as developers and start building. And then consumers aren't really going to get Windows Phone 8.1 till, you know, several months later. Maybe that's
July, August, you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I could see that.
But I'm curious on Xbox what they're going to say.
Right, because that's just open, fertile ground right now. No one has any idea. Yeah. I bet they opened it up for app and game development. I bet it's wide open.
Yeah, I bet you're right about that. Because they haven't really talked about the app development strategy for Xbox yet. And I've been asking whether Cortana could be part of the Xbox spring-summer update, and I hear no.
It already has its own speech, right? I mean,
right.
Is that a separate path completely from Cortana?
I know. It seems like you would want to have one thing, right? You'd want to have Cortana on your phone and your PC and your Xbox.
Couldn't agree more.
But is it a different code base? Maybe not. I mean, maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, if I'm Microsoft and I've got a speech recognition system in Xbox, and I'm looking at putting it on Windows Phone, I don't start from scratch. Or maybe you do, I don't know.
I think you kind of have to, because what makes speech work on Xbox is Kinect, right?
Well, that's just a microphone. I mean...
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's somehow...
It's not reading my lips.
It's not true, Leo.
It's sentient.
Or is it, Hal? I read your lips, Dave.
You never know, right?
It is a kind of glowing red light
in your lights.
Well, but even if it's a different code underneath, the engine, I'm sure, is agnostic. Or yeah, not. I
mean,
know.
I think
could be written as, Bing, it could be written as assembly language for all I know. I don't know.
The Bing entity relationship stuff that's going to power part of Cortana, I think that would also be what is powering, you're right, powering speech recognition on Xbox.
Yeah. I mean, you don't write a whole new code base.
What if Cortana was programmed by Cortana?
Ooh. Cortana, the Forbin Project. Well, and I think that it's interesting because I'll just compare it to Google. That's where Microsoft has a real opportunity with synergy. You know, what Google does is they have all these planets, and then you're slowly seeing them shape in themselves into a whole that interacts and interoperates. And obviously, that's the way any company with multiple software initiatives should operate. Microsoft's historically had trouble with doing that.
Right.
But boy, I mean, seems like this is where they're, is this not where they're going? Is unifying at least the interface? Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they're going. I mean, that's one thing they've been pretty clear about, I feel like. The idea is we know we have three different versions of Windows right now. We have the Windows that's in Xbox. We have the Windows that's in Windows PCs and devices. And we have Windows Phone. And the plan is these have to become way more closely aligned in terms of the API set and the developer tools and the UI. That's their very clear message. The question is how long does it take you to get there? How many steps are there? And how does it look as a developer as you're going that way? I think that's the big question.
Yep. Concisely said. I would have blabbed through about 10 minutes.
I'm not prepared to move on.
That was my sound bite of the day. I'm done.
Damn.
Yeah, what she just said. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, the other thing we know is coming, supposedly, is the Common Core, right? Like at the Microsoft annual, the company meeting that happened last year, they showed off, supposedly, according to people we've talked to, the idea of a Common Core for Windows and Windows Phone. And I would think at some point Xbox, too, so that you have all the apps for all of these things in one place, and you pick the one that goes on whichever form factor.
I don't know if this is still in Windows 8.1. I'm tempted to go look, but there was a goofy thing in the original. Yeah, they got rid of it. So in the original version of Windows 8, there's a games app, right, which still exists in 8.1. But you could go in, and there were two sections to it. There was a Windows Game Store and an Xbox Game Store. And you could actually buy a game for the Xbox from the Windows Store. And the way it worked was the next time you turned on your console, it would install, you know. So I guess if you had multiple consoles, you wanted to be kind of, you know, careful with that, like which one it would install on or whatever. But so they kind of, it was almost like a hint that, you know, this stuff is all possible. I'm sure this stuff is all on the same back end. But they don't do that anymore. You know, the Windows 8.1 version of this app doesn't include the Xbox stuff anymore. I don't think. I don't see it.
Today's the end of Windows 8.1 support. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was quick.
Not yet.
We had a good run.
Not quite yet.
3 months.
God, you wouldn't think it would die before XP, but no, Windows 8.1 preview support dies. So,
yeah, right. And that I actually just this great. Week had to help a friend with his Surface. He could not get the 8.1 final build installed. And I feel like kind of a jerk because I kind of pushed him into installing the preview and told him he would have no problems. And then he couldn't do it. And I kind of did a lot of hand-holding over the weekend over the phone, virtually, I guess, and couldn't get it. And I thought to myself, God, this guy just doesn't, he's not doing something right. And so finally I got the machine here and I couldn't get it to work either. So I had to just manually install Windows 8.1 in this thing or upgrade it. But man, this would be a bad time to discover that particular problem because this thing is basically not supported anymore. Although I guess it still works. I assume it would work for some period of time.
And any advice for those who are facing the deadline now, finally wish to abandon preview?
Yeah, just sort of full board? Send it to my house and I'll do it for you. It's just too complex.
They're going to have to reinstall. We told them this. We reinstall the apps. It's not so
well,
hard.
Yes. I mean, you get the choices. You can bring your data forward, your documents, or do nothing, which means, or bring this guy's particular Surface had a very strange issue where it wouldn't display the advertisement for 8.1. And if you'd forced it using that URL that you could use to type in, you know, in a web browser, it would go to the download page for Windows 8.1. You'd hit download, and then it would just go back to the front of the store. It wouldn't actually download or install the update. So I actually have no idea what happened there, but ways of making it talk. So I figured it out myself. But, I mean, it's not something.
It's not complicated. It's just anybody who installs a preview should be, you know, this is,
yeah,
that's the price you pay. And we, God, I feel like we said it so many times.
Well, my stock response is someone will say, you know, should I install the preview?
No.
And I say, if you're asking that question,
you
then
should not.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
no.
Yeah.
No, don't. No.
Yep.
So, Scroogle. Oh, I'm sorry. Google's at it again.
Yeah.
They are. Do you think there is an actual, like, animosity between Microsoft and Google? Google's got to be stinging. Scroogled has to sting a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, of course, on the other hand, Google, the YouTube fiasco on Windows Phone.
It's just insane. It's like lashing out at someone's little kid, a little brother. You know, it's like, I don't like you. I'm going to beat up your little brother.
And, of course, who suffers? Not Google or Microsoft, the user.
This is the problem I have, you know, and I noticed this the other day. Every morning I get up and I do certain things, you know, that are kind of maintenance related with my website and so forth. And one of the things I do is I look through the comments and I noticed all the little UI controls were different and smaller and harder to click, you know. And I thought, you know, Penton's doing it to me again. They changed something on the back end. They didn't tell me. And it wasn't Penton, which was a delightful change. It was Google. Like they changed the controls in the browser from the native Windows controls to some UI kit that they use. For, I don't know if it's for Chrome on Chrome OS or whatever it is. And I took some screenshots of this, and they're much smaller. You know, for example, the scroll bar is 10 pixels wide now, and it used to be 15. So that's like a 50% drop, you know, in width. That's not a good one. Go, scroll down to the next one.
We can see it here. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's a big difference.
There's no arrow at the top. See at the bottom.
Non-native controls are, I think, always a bad idea.
Yeah. Now, people will point out, as I have done here, that Microsoft is no stranger to using non-native controls. In fact, you could look at Office to see some of them. The Zoom PC software everyone seems to love so much. Full of non-native controls. But, you know, one of the things I've been paying attention to a lot lately is how Microsoft handles their mobile apps on Android and iOS. And actually, those apps are very good examples of them using native controls. And in the case of iOS 7, conforming to the new UI conventions of the new version of Apple's OS. And so this kind of behavior, when you're putting software on another platform, especially one that you're competing with, I think it's a different thing. And I don't like it. I if there was some switch in Google and in Chrome that I could use to turn it off, and maybe there is, I'd be okay with that, I guess. But I don't know how to look at this other than, you know, this just seems like we're harming common users. Further your OS ambitions.
You think they did it on purpose, like to harm? I don't think that.
Well, okay, so there are two sides. That it could be because for some reason, from a sort of a code maintenance perspective, it's easier to do this. I don't know how Chrome is constructed, how cross-platform it is. I actually think that's baloney, and they don't do it on the Mac, but whatever, I don't know. And the other one is, yes, they're trying to harm Microsoft and or push Chrome OS, because, you know, the Windows 8 version of Chrome includes this kind of Metro, sort of Metro version of the browser. And in this release of Chrome, it's not the browser, it's Chrome OS, basically. You get the Chrome OS app launcher, which is that top screenshot in that site you were looking at, the web page you're looking at. You know, you get the weird UI controls in the upper corner of the window. It's the browser's windowed. It's not full screen, which is part of the deal with the Metro app. I mean, it just subverts everything about the Metro environment more like Chrome OS.
Ironically, Google trumpets this in the blog post.
I know.
A new look for Windows 8 Metro.
look, we've added multiple Windows to Metro. Thank you, you're welcome, Microsoft.
Yeah, you know, which is, of course, not what Metro
are going to like this.
This is like running a virtual machine.
I kind of want it.
They have updated the default styling of UI elements like form controls and scroll bars to match the sleek design of the new Chrome Metro interface. That's kind of tautological.
You're using.
Wait a minute. They're saying we've updated the design to match the design. Is that not?
This is misspoken.
A tautology?
They have met the sleek design of Chrome OS is what they
Chrome OS is what they mean to say, not. Yeah. Chrome Metro.
If you look at that picture of that floating window, for example, up in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see two buttons. There's a close button,
and then there's
this other thing.
Yeah.
That other thing doesn't exist in Windows. If you hover over that with the mouse in real life, it expands a pop-up that has three options, like minimize, full screen, and something else. I don't know what the other one is. And it's the way it works in Chrome OS. It has nothing to do with Windows. And I don't know.
They're matching Chrome OS.
Yeah, not when. Yeah,
that's. I doubt they did this to disadvantage people. I think that's just would be dumb. Maybe. I mean, I certainly.
I agree with one half of what you just said.
They've done other things to disadvantage Windows users, like with the YouTube app, right? That's pretty blatantly, disadvantaging Windows users. And saying they're not going to do any more Windows 8 apps or Windows Phone apps because there's just not demand, not allowing people to sync contacts, right? I mean, there's like a lot of things you can say they are doing, and it's all fair and love and business, right? Okay.
Sure.
They can do
I don't mind Google hurting Microsoft.
It's not good business. And I don't think Google's doing it just because they want you to use Chrome. Making Chrome worse in Windows does not benefit Google in any way.
Well, actually, I will say, ironically, these changes notwithstanding, Chrome is actually better in Windows than it is in Chrome OS. And that's kind of a weird irony. But
I wish I could run Chrome.
Yeah.
On my Surface RT. I would love to run Chrome on my Surface RT.
Google wishes you would too. So why would they make it worse?
No, Microsoft won't runs let RT. You run it.
Oh, Microsoft won't. Yeah.
No, Microsoft will allow it.
They won't.
I mean, they've certainly limited it in some ways, but.
I know.
Yeah.
Google does. I think it's a mistake to think that. I don't think Google makes much money on Chrome OS. Google wants you to use Google stuff on every platform.
I think you have to look a little beyond Chrome OS. I mean, Chrome OS, anytime Google can pull customers away from Microsoft, it's kind of benefiting Google, you know, however it happens. And so I look at this as sort of an inroad. It's a way to get people comfortable with this interface. And even a small percentage of, I don't remember what the, it was 1.8 million. It was some like, seven tenths of a percent of PC sales last year were Chrome OS or something, some tiny number, but that's going to grow, right? It'll be 2, it could be 5, you know, whatever. Every one of those sales, every time someone opens up a Chromebook and uses Chrome instead of using some Microsoft thing is a win, you know, for Google.
And I think you're wrong.
Trojan horse.
No, I think you're wrong. I don't think that's the case. I think Google wants you to use Chrome. It doesn't care if you use Chrome OS or not. That's how Microsoft thinks, because Microsoft sells an operating system. Google is not making money on Chrome OS. It's making money on you using the internet. I agree this was a dumb thing to do. I'm not saying that. But I don't think they did it maliciously.
So you're saying it's dumb but not insidious.
I think it's exactly. I mean, it's dumb, but I don't think that they're trying to make you say, oh, I hate Chrome on Windows. Well, I'm going to buy a Chromebook. That makes no sense.
No.
I look at this kind of laundry list of animosity items that have occurred between these two companies, and I sort of lump it into that. But honestly, it doesn't matter. My problem with this is just as a user of Chrome, and I really like Chrome and use it every day, it's less usable.
I'll agree with you 100%. Don't do that, Google. Go back to native. Always use native controls. But Google's not alone. I mean, Microsoft doesn't use native controls I could think of a long list. And even, I hate to say it, IE 11. Yeah. Right?
IE 11. What do you mean?
I was just going to, well, I'm thinking of IE11 for something else. I'm thinking, because I in fact said this today to Paul, I'm like, you know what? On my Surface RT, I would kill to be able to use Chrome, the browser. And the reason is because IE11 is awful on that machine.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to hear a lot of hate because I just said that, but man, there's so many blank screen pages that are still coming up with IE11 on my Surface RT.
And I you're right. I mean,
right?
The only reason I still use IE is because I pin websites to the taskbar. And the one thing that IE does that Chrome doesn't is allow you to have multiple tabs on a pinned site. So I can have multiple email accounts on multiple tabs on one window, which I really like. And if you pin sites with Chrome, it's one page per pin.
Yeah.
And one window, I should say, which is the more important bit, because from a sort of, just like an alt tab navigation perspective, you have a proliferation of windows now.
But my point being that IE11 uses non-native controls in Windows 7.
In Windows 7, does it?
Yeah, it uses Windows 8 controls. And that makes sense because you want one code base.
Well,
and
they're doing it for the same reason Google is. They want you to move forward to the new thing.
That makes sense. They want you to go to Windows 8. Yeah. I don't think it makes sense that Google says, oh, we're going to make Chrome believe me, there's better ways to make Chrome crappy on Windows 8 than have non-native controls, if that's what they want to do.
I actually don't think they meant for it to be crappy. I'm saying it is crappy, but I do think that this smooths the way for people that want to make that move.
It makes it easier to understand because you've seen these controls before.
Now it works like the one in Chrome OS.
Right.
So if you go into Chrome OS, it's now a lot less difficult.
Well, okay. Or you could say Google UI designers decided in Chrome OS, the OS they control, to do it this way because they think it's better, so they're going to do it across the board.
Maybe that dictates something for Chrome now that we don't know about.
I don't know. I just can't. No, it's Google's business
model.
It's
such a mistake.
Yeah, it's a mistake. You shouldn't do it.
Such a mistake.
Yeah. Stick with native.
When Apple was still pushing this kind of weird, like, blue gel cap UI for everything, like the buttons look like, cold medicine and whatever. I mean, apps that had, like, flat UIs or whatever were very out of place.
Right,
I mean, as awful as I might have thought that was, at least it was consistent, you know. It reminds me of actually Java, like a Java app, and how for a while there, when Java sort of was taken off for a little while on the desktop, these things just looked out of place. You know, they had their own kind of UI.
Yeah, Java had, this was a big problem with Java, and they created Swing, and they tried to get native UI.
They tried to look native, and there's nothing that looks less like native than something that's trying to be native.
I would submit it killed Java. It killed Java as a... app platform, because people want native. Yeah. And frankly, Microsoft Office on the Mac for years used its own memory manager because Microsoft decided it was better, and it wasn't.
You could go back Mac Office.
This is a long history.
They actually were running like a P code thing where they were trying to share code between Windows and the Mac, and it was just a performance disaster.
It's not necessarily anti-competitive. I think if you make a product for a platform, your goal is to get people to use it.
Well,
I don't think so. I'm gonna err on the side of never assume malice when ignorance will suffice.
I'm not assuming,
Paul, so Paul, let me ask you another question since I can't try it out myself. I've read a couple people saying what also works. There's one thing that works better in this Chrome 32 release which is. The kind of the experience that you have if you're using it on Windows 8 and you're not being dumped like into the desktop version of the browser versus the Metro version, that it's a smoother transition with Chrome.
So
is that
I don't
true?
Understand what they're doing. When Microsoft announced how they were going to handle browsers in Windows 8, they said there was some controversy because Google and Firefox both complained that Microsoft wasn't giving them the full power in the Metro environment.
Right.
And so I don't know if this Google kind of almost Metro, not quite Metro thing is that pseudo Metro environment that Microsoft created for them, or if this is something Google did or whatever. But the thing I do like about this, or I don't like about it, maybe that's a strong term. The thing that's interesting about this is that you can go to, the menu bar in Chrome and you can say relaunch Chrome in Windows 8 mode. And so if you've configured Chrome, most people have IE configured as the default browser. And so if you try to do that, you have to switch to Chrome as your default browser, right? Because it becomes like the Metro browser. For some reason, you can only have one Metro browser. So if you go back to the home, the start screen, and you click on IE, the desktop version of IE launches, not the, like the Metro version is now gone, right?
Right.
And then it's weird. So if I run, I click Chrome on the taskbar and I jump into the Metro version. But from the Metro version, I can do that same thing and I can say relaunch Chrome on the desktop. And now it pumps back to the desktop. It reloads. It has the same tabs loaded. So you can go back and forth. I hesitate to call this an advantage, but it is.
I know.
It's unique. I mean, you can. It's interesting.
I guess the question is it like less jarring than it is when you have IE set as your default?
Well, no. I actually
guess that's a call. Everybody's own call, right? Do you consider it jarring or not jarring? Switching back and forth.
Actually, it's different because one of the weird things about IE is you can have both running at the same time. Right. You could have the Metro version running in the desktop version. This one, you can only have one or the other. So if you say, I want to run Chrome on Metro, Chrome's always in Metro. There's no Chrome on the desktop. But if you switch it back to desktop, now there's no Metro Chrome. Right. If that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. I don't know if that'd be less or more confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in writing this Windows 8.1 book, I had to describe all the situations in which you could configure your system with regards to a web browser and how IE interacts with different browsers, including itself, if you will, or the desktop version is very strange. And this is completely different. And it's equally strange, but it's just different. So this is the wonderful world of Windows today.
Yeah.
The wonderful world of Windows.
Yeah.
We get our own theme song.
It is unbelievable.
And Mary Jo, you don't... So I'm confused. There is no Chrome on RT. Is that right?
No. You can. So the only... because you can only download apps on Windows RT through the store. And Chrome, the Chrome browser is not an app in the store.
Is that because Google didn't do it or because...
That's...
We don't know.
We don't
or
know.
Is but, that because
well, Google
Microsoft's...
did do it the way they did it. But if Google had done it correctly, if you will, to Microsoft specifications, it would be in the store.
Yeah, I would think
so. It
would
be in the store, right?
So is that because Google didn't want it in the store or they didn't want to do what Apple? I don't understand what Microsoft
wanted. Yeah, we don't hear. Nobody knows. They haven't really said.
I think that's to Paul's point about the objections that some browser vendors had about they didn't like the idea that you have to be, there can only be one default browser and all that. But I'm forgetting now, and I know somebody will remember in the chat room, why there isn't one for it.
Well, for example, a Metro browser can't support plugins.
Ah, and that pretty much disables Chrome.
Right. So I can assure you that Chrome supports plugins in this thing that's like Metro but isn't really Metro.
Right.
Although they call it Windows 8 mode.
But
when you
Windows
launch
8
this
mode
thing,
doesn't work on a tablet on RT. So
it right because it's a you have to install
it's only
the desktop.
For Windows Pro, yeah.
Yeah, and it has that weird UI. It's very strange.
I mean, Google would have had to redo the browser to be to run on ARM for Windows on ARM, right? So I don't know how much.
So there's an example of I could see Google saying, "Well, we're not going to do that."
Right.
Even though I've said Google wants to be everywhere and get you using Google stuff, there's a limit, and it's bad for the brand if they have to make a hobbled browser. For RT, right. It's just bad for the brand. So they're just because that would be my as a brand manager, I'd say, well, I'd love to be on RT, and I know Mary Jo Foley would love me to be on RT.
Yep,
she's but, the only
and I know
one
that was
out
a consideration,
but I'm not going to make a crappy what I see as a hobbled or crappy version of Chrome just because Microsoft says I have to. So I'm just.
Although
not
I think
it.
That Firefox is coming. Firefox is coming.
But that's different. That's an open source project. So it has a very different kind of mentality around it, right? That's, we develop it for whatever platform users are willing to put time into developing it for.
Yeah.
And if we have to make a, bizarro world version of Firefox to be on RT, we will. If somebody comes along and writes it. Mm-hmm. I guess Mozilla is kind of a company, but I know it's not...
Kind of like Yahoo is kind of a business.
And there's no other. There must be other third-party browsers for Windows or for Surface, right?
for Surface RT? No, right?
Nothing?
Right now, I believe there's nothing.
Except Firefox to come. It's, you know, it was like that on the iPad for a long time. The only browsers you could get were really crappy old weird, you know, Sleepnir type browsers.
Even Sleepnir wouldn't go on iOS.
Same, which I think is the same issue, you know. More antitrust concessions, as long as we're going to talk about Google. You want to take a victory lap, Paul, on this one?
The EU, this is not my story.
The EU is unhappy.
Yeah. This is, you know, this kind of plays into your idea, Leo. How much animosity is there between the two companies? Because every time you're looking at Microsoft or Google going, I know, look at him. Yeah. Yes.
Is he holding a pin to boost, to burst Google's bubble?
So wait, we had Nelly Kroes, we had Mario Monti, and what is this guy's name?
Joaquin Almunia.
Almunia. I love these guys.
Yeah. He says, if you don't want formal charges, you must come up with concessions. That's a in nondescript European accent. I don't know where he's from.
It's kind of like, is it safe?
He's safe? I would guess he's from Spain, but I do not know. So what are concessions do they want?
This is the whole thing about Google and search, and do they have a monopoly? And Microsoft's been one of the ones kind of agitating here for this, right? Of course.
Yeah, they've been lobbying. But this is not about privacy. This is about anti-competitive behavior.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yep. This is, so Google has 90% of the search market in Europe. They have like 70% in the U.S. So the idea is Google, the way they've structured their search engine, giving preference to their own branded services, results at the top of the page. And is that influencing what users are going to click on and then buy? And are they having an inordinate amount of influence because of their monopoly position? So Google came back, said, oh, okay, we're going to change the way we label some search results, blah, blah, blah. But the EU is saying, no, that you got to go further than this. This is not enough. And you know what happened to Microsoft in the EU when they were having antitrust issues? They paid, I forget how many billions as a fine in their case. So I would think Google is probably at risk for something similar.
Well, but Google got kind of a sweetheart deal that Microsoft didn't get, which was, in Microsoft's case, they just declared them guilty of antitrust violations and then they went to court. In Google's case, they said, you know, if you guys don't settle really quick, we're gonna find you guilty of sweeping antitrust violations. And then Google proceeded to, this is now the third round of concessions that they're trying to make to avoid that fate. You know, with Microsoft, there was not that Microsoft of that day would have been, you know, had the wherewithal to actually try to settle ahead of time. But, you know, it's funny to me that the world has changed enough that Google wasn't just swept under the carpet immediately. Like, they actually were given a chance to get this right. And, man, they really don't want to get it right. So they've been really pushing back. So we'll see.
We shall see.
But God, you know, governments move slow everywhere. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Or
what do you think about the Nest acquisition? You know, the big story, of course, that everybody talks about, Google buying Tony Fadell's Nest thermostat and smoke alarm business for $3.2 billion, is why didn't Apple get it? Why didn't Microsoft get it?
Right. Did they even try to get it?
I doubt it very much. That's a lot of money to pay for thermostat business.
Yeah.
For by the way, a luxury thermostat business.
I have two. They're $250, and they are a luxury. In fact, I didn't even bother to install them when I moved. It's like, yeah, that's nice, but I don't really.
Well, when it comes to a smoke alarm, it's like I think the unit I have up in the ceiling there cost $5 and takes a 9-volt battery.
Charging an awful lot
of
money.
And if there's smoke, it makes an ungodly noise, which is pretty much what you're
that's
looking
all
for.
You need.
Not, hey, I just got an alert from my smoke alarm on my smartphone. Let me, you know, I just, it's such a rich thing, you know. I don't know. Home automation has always been on the edge of acceptability. It's like super expensive home theaters. It's just a bit much.
But, you know, my question and a bunch of the readers on my site were asking, okay, so if Google bought Nest now, does it mean there's never going to be a an official Nest app from Google for Windows Phone and Windows 8. Good question.
I don't think there was ever going to be one anyway, so sure.
You never know.
If Windows Phone market share broke 10%, there would be.
It has, quite a few countries, right?
Yeah.
Not in the U.S., but in other countries it has.
I think I don't think Google is, well, I don't know.
I think
they're like, oh, I hate that Microsoft. We're not going to make anything for them.
I think they hate each other. I think the two companies really
hate each other. I think it's a childish hate.
Yeah, I don't think it's very grown up.
It's a petty hate.
Certainly not good for business because you want to be on every platform that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's Google's business model.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I know. We'll see. There are a couple of Nest apps, though, from third parties.
There's an API.
In the Windows Phone Store.
There's an API.
Yep. There is Roost, if anybody wants it.
They've given every indication that they're going to run it like Skype and let it be its own little entity that exists.
We'll not a Nest app for Windows Phone now, we should point out.
There are.
Well, they're third-party apps.
Right. Two third-party apps.
Nest never wrote one even before Google.
Right. The other one is called
I think Nest is out to get Microsoft.
Yes.
No, they said this is too small a platform.
That's not the same thing. Plenty of places don't have Windows Phone apps. That's not animosity. It's just good business.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. You don't have to assume animosity.
I
will, though.
I'm not sure we are assuming animosity.
I mean, there's plenty of reason for it. I understand the Scroogled ads, the patent lawsuits.
Right.
There's plenty of reason for it. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like Google's a little more mature than that, but maybe not. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past Apple. I mean, Apple, in the heritage of Steve Jobs, was very visceral in its reaction towards competition and would go after people.
Sure.
Does Microsoft do that? I don't think so. It's a business.
Yeah,
not anymore. Are you kidding me? These guys jump at their own shadow now. I don't know what's going on over there. No.
I think because of the antitrust cases where Google secretly and publicly agitated against Microsoft and vice versa, I think that really kind of is when the gloves came off.
Yeah.
And I also think they compete very, very seriously in not just search, but also in apps, right? Google Docs versus Office 365.
Yeah. Google has very quickly gotten into Microsoft's backyard. I mean, when they were a search company and, There are businesses that always make sense based on where you start. You know, like if you look at Amazon, they started with books. That made sense. They moved to whatever. It always made sense. Microsoft started with PC apps, programming languages, got into operating systems almost by mistake. So for them to move into workgroup computing and servers and that kind of thing, it makes sense. You know, Google search engine, Gmail, it kind of makes sense. You know, these online services. And then it's like, we have an Office productivity suite, and now we have an operating system. And now it's like, wait, what happened? Like, it's kind of a weird thing. And so obviously it happens on the flip side as well. Microsoft starts a search engine, and they jump into the same kind of markets as each other. And suddenly these two companies that were coexisting are butting heads. Apple and Google did the same thing with Android over Android. I mean, everything is fine until it isn't fine. You know, companies grow and they get into each other's businesses.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Patch Tuesday, the Black update, more Microsoft news, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Microsoft on Windows Weekly at our new time. And I do want to emphasize, we are now on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. If you like to watch live, that's the time to tune in. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. Squarespace is the best web hosting, plus the best software, the best e-commerce. It's just the best. I want you to give it a try, and I think they know they're the best. I love it when a company says, we feel so good about our product, we give you a free offer, free trial for 2 weeks. You don't give us a credit card or anything. You'll never get a bill. Just try it for 2 weeks. Get started. Go to Squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. You'll take a look at their beautiful designer templates. Pick one you like. Don't feel like you're locked in, because all the design of Squarespace sits independently from content. So we're going to pick this one. Momentum. I like this. Full bleed, beautiful doggies. By the way, if you want to say, well, what is this template look like? scroll down, you'll see these are actual sites using Momentum. They all look different because once you're just the template is just a starting point. You're able to point and click your way to a completely unique, beautiful site. It's mobile responsive. It has commerce built in. If you look at the code, it's gorgeous. I think that's really, to me, I look at the code. I know that's crazy, but I look at the JavaScript and the HTML, and when I see something that's well-designed and elegant and clear, I feel good about that company. Squarespace takes a lot of pride in their back-end code. Now, if you are a developer, by the way, they do have a great developer platform with color coding for syntax and JavaScript and CSS and all that, too. Of course, plugins that make it easy to connect your social media. So try it. My pitch is try it. You're going to get great hosting. You cannot bring it down. You're going to get a great support team, 24/7 award-winning support team. Then if you say, hey, I like it, after 2 weeks, import all your content. By the way, they have importers for all the blog APIs. That brings in the not only the text, but also the images. All the links are preserved. All the comments are preserved. So you really could see what any given template, go through all 20, looks with your content. If you decide to buy, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. The pricing starts at $8 a month with an annual plan. Most people are going to go for at least this $16 a month plan, I'll be fair, because that's unlimited. And I've never heard of a hosting service offering you unlimited bandwidth. You will never get a bandwidth bill. I don't care if you become the most popular site on the internet. It's all included with $16 a month. When you do buy an annual plan, they will set you up with your own domain name for free, part of the deal. If you want to do e-commerce, they have an e-commerce solution that's very sweet for $24 a month with no transaction fees. They give you inventory help. They give you tax and shipping calculators, coupon controls, $24 a month. Go ahead. Just compare. The best platform, the best price, Squarespace.com. The new Squarespace Metric app just came out for iPhone and iPad. Allows you to check stats on your site like page views, unique visitors, social media follows. Of course, their great blog app has always been the best. Gives you an easy way to make text updates. You could tap and drag images to change layouts, monitor comments. You really can run a Squarespace site completely mobile, which is pretty sweet. Sweet, sweet, sweet. When you decide to buy, use our offer code WINDOWS1 for the month of January, the first month. Windows, the number one, 10% off. Shows your support for Windows Weekly and lets them know where you heard the show. Squarespace.com, offer code WINDOWS1. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. We talked about Steve Gibson said yesterday, the latest possible patch Tuesday. You can't get much later than January 14th.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And a tiny one. And he says that's not because the hackers took vacation. He says because the programmers.
Microsoft took a vacation.
Yeah, Microsoft takes the holidays off.
Right, as we've discussed, yes. There's nothing to fix. We didn't make any new code.
I like your line. If a patch Tuesday comes and there are no firmware updates, do they make a sound? No.
Yeah, what happened with the firmware stuff?
Were they going to do it for Surface, right?
We were kind of expecting that Microsoft was going to fix that firmware issue from December that they had on the Surface Pro 2s. During Patch Tuesday. They never actually came out and said this publicly, but we thought they were going to do it.
This would have been the last possible day.
I know.
You know?
And right? So yesterday.
No, seriously,
came and
wouldn't
went.
This have been the last possible day you'd imagine?
Yeah, I would think. Although, instead, this was kind of weird. Instead, they fixed a firmware problem on the original Surface Pro that was very similar to this one that is on the Surface Pro 2, but they didn't fix the Surface Pro 2. They just fixed the Surface Pro. And the update fixes the case where you're connecting a new touch cover or a type cover to your original Surface, Intel-based Surface, and it kills your battery life. So they did fix that yesterday, and they have a whole thing you can do on Windows Update to get the new firmware, but they didn't release the one for the Pro 2. So some people are thinking it's going to happen today, I heard. Did you hear that?
Someone had forwarded me a screenshot of a chat that they had with Microsoft support, and they were told it was happening today, but it hasn't happened yet. So I don't know.
Yeah. So we don't
very
know.
Unusual everyone's asking to come and us. Go. But yeah. Sorry.
And no update for Xbox One. Have you been expecting that?
Well, the last one was on Patch Tuesday. And so the thought was, you know, maybe this makes sense. Why not? You know, and they've been talking about updates that are coming. Certainly there are issues with the Xbox One software that should be addressed on a rolling basis.
Like
but,
what?
Well, like the dashboarding issue we discussed previously, and then lack of functionality in certain areas. It's a lot of really kind of basic things that are missing. Play on Xbox is missing. The ability to plug in a memory device and play media off of it, you know, connect a Windows phone or something like
Not
that.
Not so much fixes as improvements.
A little bit of both, Yeah, I mean, they have to ship the thing, you know, in whatever
time frame. I agree with you on that. There's definitely missing features.
It just seemed like Patch Tuesday would have been the obvious time to do that since they did it once. But.
We don't want to be held to a schedule. We'll ship when it's done.
You know, by the way, John Carmack, the guy from id, who recently left id,
To go to work for the Visor one, right? The Oculus Rift, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's going to disappear into obscurity. But by the way, it, just like Steve Ballmer said, you know, my biggest regret, you know, the big mistake was not focusing on mobile when we did Vista. John Carmack said his biggest mistake at id was the whole we'll finish it when it's done thing. He said we should have finished everything earlier. We should have just shipped stuff in smaller increments. We would have shipped a lot more. He's like, just waiting for something to be perfect is the way that you never ship anything.
Right.
He said, if I could do anything over again, I never would have said that.
It's the EA way.
Yeah.
Ship it when it's broken.
Ship it. Compiles.
It compiles. It's out.
Hey, Call of Duty Ghost is going strong, Leo. Don't worry about it.
Just a pointer. The idea is to ship and fix. Rapid iteration. Not just ship.
Oh, my God. Iteration. Not to get off on a tangent, and I apologize to Mary Jo because this is sort of an Xbox topic. I would give anything for them to be iterating, but the problem is they have two studio. Imagine if a different company made every other version of Windows, right? So instead of everyone being an upgrade, in some cases the next one would have stuff missing from the previous one. And that's what Call of Duty does. Like, because they have two different teams of people making it, one of the teams will get something really right. And then the next version comes back, and it goes back to the way it was two versions
and
ago.
And that's on a single platform? It's not like...
It's across all the platforms.
They do it in stagger. I can see Windows
Infinity
does
Ward
it that
Treyarch.
Way, kind of.
Yeah, right. It's crazy. And so...
Wow.
It's crazy. And so, for example, in this version of the game, there's a lag situation where you have... In your view, you've made it around the corner while someone's shooting you. But in their view, they're still hitting you because you haven't made it around the corner. And then you die. And so... The way that you die is you've made it around the corner and then you fall dead on the floor. And
That's
was fixed previously in a version of Call of Duty that these guys didn't make, but they never incorporated that fix their code.
So which one do you want? You want the Treyarch Call of Duty?
It's weird because the way it started off is the Treyarch versions were always terrible and the Infinity Ward ones were always great. The Treyarch is the one, the company that makes the better games now. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
So I have a million examples of stuff like that. It drives me bonkers.
Are they in different geographic locales? Probably are, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they are, yeah. I'm sure they hate each other just like Google and Microsoft. I don't know.
I hate you, Treyarch. I hate you. Yeah.
Screw you, Treyarch.
I'm going to devour you.
Yeah. All right. So I love the Nokia code names, the Lumia code names. So they're colors, right? What was that crazy color that you found?
Amber.
No.
Bittersweet shimmer.
Bittersweet shimmer.
Yes.
That was black. Black became bittersweet shimmer.
So is it black or bittersweet shimmer? What color is it?
Black is bittersweet shimmer.
What color is your rainbow, Mary Jo?
I kind of like black. It's easier to say. It's shorter.
Yeah, but bittersweet shimmer is so evocative. It's a little Baroque. But it is evocative.
It's the color you see when you're having a stroke. And black is the next color you see.
Aha! When does a white light appear?
Yep.
Bittersweet shimmer is the new black. Or is it the other way around? Black is the new bittersweet shimmer.
Black is the bittersweet shimmer. I can't say. I think I had this problem last time. Anyway, sorry. I won't even try.
It's not exactly... rolling out fast, right? What's going on,
Paul?
All right, this is very convoluted, but it first arrived with the Lumia 1520, which is the phablet, and soon thereafter, sometime at the end of last year, they announced that if you were on AT&T and had a Lumia 1020, you could get it.
Hmm.
And now they're saying they're rolling it out more generally, but they're starting with, I believe, if I may have this wrong, but I think it's 1020 and 925 users, Lumia, worldwide or in certain markets. I don't remember, but it's not a very broad rollout. And, you know, the way that these things go is obviously they expand that over time. But the thing that kills me about this isn't
carrier specific.
It
I guess it kind of is because the code is different for AT&T and Verizon, let's say.
If you get this update, that means that you have also gotten update 3 for Windows Phone 8, right? So that needs to be part of it.
Comes separately or is it?
It's tied to that. Actually, they come together. So if you haven't gotten update 3 yet, you can get them at the same time. I feel like I'm describing diseases here. Anyway, it's like a cocktail of updates.
Update 3 not included.
yeah. So the problem I have with this, though, isn't the staggered rollout. I've been using Windows Phone for years. I get it. It's trying to find out what the heck is in this thing is like pulling teeth. Like the official Nokia description of this thing described something that wasn't in the update. And then the closer you look to it, you realize most of the stuff they're talking about is not technically in this update at all. They're like separate apps. So it's really kind of unclear exactly what is in this. There's some low-level things. Bluetooth 4 LE support is built in, or it adds that support to your phone. And so I think that enables interaction with certain classes of devices, like the little like the health monitor type devices like you might get from Nike or Adidas or something like that. It has improvements to low-level like camera functionality, not just the app, but actual low-level camera functionality. It supports a new digital negative format DNG, like a RAW format. In certain phones, high-end phones.
That's Adobe, neat.
So it's stuff like that. But when you get past the stuff that's actually in the update, the exciting stuff, the stuff that Nokia is promoting are just apps. They have nothing to do with the update beyond the fact that some of them actually require you to have the update before you can get the apps. But they're not, they're not included with it. So I don't know. I just find the whole thing to be really odd, the way they've communicated this.
Somebody in our chat room says he is in Germany. He has received black on his 920.
Okay.
Can't you just look in
the... I don't believe that's on the list.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't know what to say to that.
You said 1020, 925.
I think that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it could
be. I think many of the Lumias are going to get black, right? There's a chart somewhere on one of the Nokia sites that has the whole list of all the carriers and whether it's right now in carrier approval phase or where it is. So,
right. Yeah, it will happen. If you have Windows Phone 8, if you can get update 3, you can have black.
You can get black
if you have a Lumia smartphone. Yeah.
Is it every Lumia, though? Is it every single one? There's so many numbers.
Obviously, certain features require certain
hardware, RAM, and all
components that are not available everywhere. Yeah. It's possible some of them won't get it or won't get the full app or full functionality.
And you mentioned in your article the app. There's a couple of features that are new that we didn't know about. App folders, which is great.
That was the one that set off this for me. Yeah. Announced this. App folders was the first thing they discussed. No one had ever heard of this. They've been talking about black for months, and update 3 we know about, and app folders. Wow. So here's this feature that everybody wants in Windows Phone, the ability to put folders on the home screen, the start screen, just like you can in iOS and Android. Neat. Where is it? I've installed black. I don't see app folders. Is am I missing something? Is it hidden? Do I press and hold somewhere? How do you make this happen? But everyone I asked got it wrong. nobody seemed to know. And all of a sudden, that data appeared. It's an app.
Oh.
It's just an app.
Oh.
So not only is it just an app, it's kind of a half lousy app. You know, like,
that's
if you think about folders on iOS or Android, they open on top of the screen and they give you like a little interface. This is just, it's just an app. This whole thing has been, kind of disappointing.
Lina Sva is reporting he or she is in Sweden and has it on the 920 as well. So aren't you lucky because we have a global audience? You are getting direct feedback.
Well, according to Nokia, those people are liars.
Liars! Liars!
So
no, they're not.
That's funny.
Yeah. In Denmark, too. So,
all right. Well, all I can tell you is what they said.
A. Jensen in Denmark has it on his 925. So we expected 925. It's the 920 that spies. Black is also out in the Netherlands for Vodafone on the 920.
I have a 925 here, and I don't have it. So I did get it on my, I guess it's.
Isn't there a retail updater that will do it? I mean, aren't there apps that will force it? Or maybe not.
No, Leo. That's.
That's urban legend.
That is.
Folklore.
That would be amazing.
Not supported by anything we know of. Portland is reporting no black.
No black feet.
Some nice plaid flannels, but no black.
Bittersweet trimmer, no problem.
You did write an article, and I recommend it. Your guide to update 3 in black features is on the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com.
Yeah, I'll keep adding to it. Some of my app pick stuff is related to this. We'll talk about that later. But, there's more to come there. I mean, there's more, apps and features and stuff. So,
what's the clip art? That's a guy on a neon-lit Vespa.
Yeah, that's from a Lumia 925 advertisement about low-light photography.
Wow. Very nice. Very pretty.
Kind of keeping with the black/dark theme, I guess.
Yes. The death of XP continues to be headline news. Finally sinking in, the vast majority of XP users are suddenly going, oh, crap.
Yeah. It's funny. No matter how much we write about this over at ZDNet, it can't be enough. We get so many comments and questions about what's going to happen to me. I'm still running XP, which makes sense. I mean, the market share for Windows XP is still 29%, which is still pretty big. Bigger than Windows 8, right? I've been asking some of the, slowly and surely getting some more answers from Microsoft about things that readers have been asking. So I'll tell you 3 interesting things I've got all confirmed now. One is people were asking me whether if they're running XP, if they're still going to have to activate it through Microsoft after April 8th, 2014.
What?
So there are some people who have licenses to it who want to put it on different hardware after that date. So they were wondering if
what?
I do it.
Stop it. Stop the madness.
If I do it, can I? And the answer is you are going to still have to activate. And yes, you can. You can take your license and you can put it on hardware after that date.
So the activation servers are still running.
They're still running.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I know. Yeah. So that's
not
one.
That we recommend you install XP on anything at this point.
No, but as I have pointed out a couple times before, and I'll say again, I know why people are running it still. In some cases, it's because they're cheap and they don't want to buy new machines. Sometimes, though, it's because they have software or peripherals that won't work with newer machines. And for whatever reason, they can't or won't upgrade because of that.
My Epson MX80 dot matrix printer will not work.
It's still cheap, Mary Jo.
It's cheap.
It's the same symptom.
I can't get Windows 7 on my Packard Bell.
No, I've heard from some people who have very specialized hardware, like medical devices or something like that, that were built for Windows XP.
I understand. No, I'm being facetious here. Of course, they all call the radio show.
And, I'm sure they do.
And I try as best I can to explain. It's fine. Don't plug it into the internet. It's going to continue to work just fine. The minute you plug it into the internet, you will be hacked on April 9th going forward. You will really? Be hacked.
You think it's that serious? Like it's going
to
be?
Paul,
hard to tell.
Paul, how many Windows XP machines are out there? What was it? You said
400 something million. Yeah.
400 million. Hello, my name is Boris the Hacker. I have in my pocket right now.
Actually, that could be the new email scam. It's like, Windows XP is no longer supported, but if you install our security suite.
Exactly. There's a good one. Set. Hey, nice thinking.
You can activate
that
against our servers in Romania, and you'll be up and running
you'll
in
be
minutes.
We activate all Windows XP versions.
Right.
Also,
right.
Also,
in,
you
in,
have,
yeah. in Russia, have, the, in, yeah, Windows XP activates you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to figure these guys have many exploits, and they're just sitting on them. They're going, you know, why trigger an exploit now when Microsoft still has time to patch it? We wait till April 9th, and party time!
We were so worried about Y2K, you know?
I know.
But this is going to be like the real PC apocalypse.
What I'm telling people is if you are running an XP machine and you put it on the internet after April 8th, it will be hacked. Period. Mm. Period. Now, somebody sent me a note saying, oh, no, no, you see, Microsoft's offering updates. You just have to pay for them. How much? I said, I believe that's an enterprise program. How much would I have to pay? How big a volume licensed customer would I have to be to continue to get
XP
updates?
How big of a check would I have to write? I'd like to get a fix for this bug. You're like, sure, that'll be $80,000.
It's not for everyone.
For PC.
No, that's what I told him. I said, this is an enterprise thing. You got to be a volume licensed customer. And it's not you.
It's not you.
It's not you.
So I'll tell you two other things that people have asked. I actually had people ask if I'm running XP mode on Windows 7 on either the professional, enterprise, or ultimate versions, what happens to me after April 8th?
That's a good question, yeah.
So the answer is that continues to work. But again, Microsoft's not going to be patching or updating XP mode. I mean, since they're not updating XP, that is not going to be updated. So you're at risk also if you're doing that. But it's not going to go away. A few people said, are they going to patch Windows 7 somehow and take XP mode away? No, they're not.
No. No, they only do that when you upgrade to Windows 8.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. There's a lot of people probably running XP mode on Windows 7 Professional. Yeah.
And then the last one is people have been asking what happens to Microsoft Security Essentials, which is Microsoft's anti-malware, antivirus software that's free.
Well, this surely will be good news.
Are they going to keep supporting me on Windows XP after April 8th?
What is that? What is a universal symbol for?
It's like the
drawing
Rodney Dangerfield thing where you're like, yeah.
Right.
I don't get no updates. No, they're not, right?
They are not. But just today, they did say that they're going to continue to provide updates to the anti-malware signatures and engine for XP through 2015.
Oh, that's very good news. So they will be updating signatures.
They will.
Oh, that's very good news.
So there's a little something for you there. If you're one of those
people. Then, Mr. Boris, the hacker, you're going to have to be careful and only use exploits that require an update to Microsoft Security in Essentials.
Right.
So XP really means exploit now, is that what
XP
you're saying?
XP stands for exploit. how cheap do you have to be, really? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, it is kind of crazy.
I guess if it's a medical device, like my heart-lung machine will only work with XP. Okay. Mm. But that shouldn't be connected to the internet anyway. Okay, Mayo Clinic guys, you got any XP running in the clinic? But you're not, but you're air gapping it, right? You're not putting it on the internet. You'd be nuts. I understand that. No, you know what? The big General Electric X-ray machine is running Service Pack 1.
Yes.
Of course it is. Because they're not, but you just don't connect it to the internet. I would presume.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys are volume licensed customers and you're going to continue to get patches.
It'd be an interesting video game. You know,
he's like going, I don't know.
IE5, get online, see how long it is until you get hacked.
We used to do that. We did it on the screensavers. Back when the NetBIOS hack was prevalent, you know?
See how long it takes for a drive-by.
Yeah, you just, you know, port 139, leave it open, see what happens. Boom!
That's awesome.
Boom! And then what is it? There are viruses like Melissa that are just, you know, worms that are just endemic. They're just like always circulating. And so presumably if you run an unpatched machine on the net, it's not going to take very long. I don't know if that's still the case, but we did that. We did that. And it was, of course, an instant infection. Was it Code Red and Nimda? Those are all still out there. Remember those?
Your site's been hacked by the Chinese. I got that one.
Yeah. Sasser. That was the one where you just kept rebooting over and over again. Those are worms, right? So they're just sitting on the internet waiting to be.
You kind of miss those days. It's like missing the Cold War, you know?
The Mayo Clinic guys are just, they're not going to say anything. If I had not mentioned their company by name, maybe I'd have gotten more out of them. But I think medical equipment is, in fact, a very big category. These are very expensive units, but they're not going to put Windows 7 in them.
Maybe Google could buy the company that makes those devices.
Change the UI.
Put little, I can't click the radio button. I need to give this guy radiation treatment, but I can't click it.
Anything else your readers are asking, Mary Jo, about XP?
One last thing they were asking is whether Microsoft's going to continue to make available to them all the updates that they've made to Windows XP up until April 8th on via Windows Update servers. And yes, they're going to keep that. I don't know how long they keep it, but they keep it pretty much forever. So you can always go get the updates up till the point that Microsoft discontinues them from Windows Update.
So really what they're saying is, look, we're not going to devote any more manpower to fixing problems on Windows XP. We're going to keep the servers running, the activation servers, the update servers. We're even, and I think this is pretty respectable, going to continue to update virus signatures. But we're not going to send programmers into the breach to fix problems with XP. They're moving on to another. Wonder who that guy is that's been doing that.
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be like the intern hazing ritual.
Is it April yet? Can I please start working on Vista?
Right. Right. Have we added support for two concurrent connections on a network yet? We have?
Someday,
when did that happen?
I hope to be 64-bit. He's in the basement. You know he's in the basement saying, I want my Hamler. Now, I'm really curious about this headline, and I've resisted clicking the link because I have no idea, but I have, my imagination's gone wild. Office 365 plus GoDaddy.
It's not what you think, Leo.
What is
it? It's not.
Danica is not going to come out and fix my computer?
No.
They're partnering.
Oh, I would potentially pay extra for that kind of support.
I like your fire suit. I'm here to fix your computer.
Why do you keep throwing milk on your keyboard?
Okay. Fire away, Mary Jo Foley. This is your story.
Okay. So, Microsoft, you know, Microsoft's going to where the users are to try to get Office 365 users on board. So one place there are a lot of small business users is GoDaddy still, in spite of how their popularity has kind of dived.
That's with the digerati, not with the...
It's true.
The little
true
guy. So I still get calls again on the radio show, people saying, well, GoDaddy server is having... It's like, oh, please.
Yeah. So they're saying if you're on GoDaddy, Microsoft and GoDaddy are going to offer you these three different plans where you can use your domain there and look like you have a professional account. So you can get this Email Essentials account, which
nice.
Is using Office 365, $4 per user per month. And you get 5 gigs of email storage, 2 gigs of SkyDrive Pro storage.
Yeah.
And then they have one for $8.99 a month with 50 gigs of email storage. And then they've got this Productivity Plus one, which gives you for $12.49 a month the email storage, the SkyDrive Pro, you get Office mobile apps for iPhone and Android, and you get Office desktop apps that you can put on your PCs or Macs, up to 5 PCs or Macs, for $12.49 per user per month. So this is all through them as partners. And Microsoft's done this before. They did a similar partnership like this with Verizon Wireless. They've done one with Sprint. So they're just trying to basically go to where the small business users are and say, hey,
sense.
Here you go.
Google,
that's all
Google,
it is.
Google does this with their Google apps. I know with Hover, our sponsor, they do it.
Well, the one nuance here, though, is that the plans are different on GoDaddy than they are in Office 365. If
are
you
they
go
better,
to the direct,
better deals?
There's more deals. And so if you're an enterprise customer, you have many plans to choose from. But if you're a small business customer, you only have two. You have small business and small business premium. Those two plans map roughly to the second and third plans that GoDaddy offers. But that first plan, the really inexpensive one, is unique to GoDaddy. And it allows small businesses that have certain users with minimal needs to save a lot of money. And so that might be one advantage to going to GoDaddy. And plus, if you're already managing your domain or your website through GoDaddy, it gives you that integration there as well. And so we all kind of make fun of GoDaddy for the, you know, for the TV ads and so forth. But, oh, and for the endless spam that they send. But whatever.
Well, they they've changed to be fair, they've changed the management team. They've said, we're not going to do sexy ads anymore.
Sure.
No more.
So why do we care about them again?
No more of this kissing.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Now they have Office 365, which arguably is sexier.
Yeah. Sexier than Bar Raffaele. I think that's it. Am I right?
All right. See you guys later.
No. Still need a tip from you, a software pick. We got some beer. We got some code names. We got an enterprise pick of the week all still to come. Don't go away. Don't go away yet. Coming up, of course, in about half an hour. It's This Week in Google at its new time as well. Actually, it's its old time. You guys are the new time. Our show today is brought to you by the good folks at Carbonite Online Backup. They recently... they've done some really neat things for customers. This is a very customer-centric company. They had originally moved their support offshore, as a lot of companies did. When the customers said, I don't like it, they moved them back. I think they're in Vermont now. They're U.S.-based support. They were throttling after 200 gigabytes, saying quite reasonably, if you're packing up more than 200 gigabytes, maybe you're not. But they've taken the throttles off. So this is really, I think, for $59.99 a year, truly unlimited backup for everything on a single Mac or a PC that's less than $5 a month is a very, very good deal. They do have business versions of Carbonite for no matter what kind of business, what kind of system. Carbonite is really a great way to go. They've got the personal, the pro, the server, always one flat rate, yearly rate. But here's the deal. Go to Carbonite.com and try it. There's a lot of advantages to Carbonite. It's automatic, so you don't have to think about backup. I think any backup's got to be continuous, so you get versioning. And it's cloud storage. So when you use Carbonite, your stuff is available to you anywhere. You just log on to the Carbonite cloud using your Carbonite account. And there's your stuff. You can download files. You can email files to other people. They have smartphone apps. They're free. I really like Carbonite. I don't send a laptop out of my house without Carbonite on it. So here's the deal. 2 weeks free. You don't need a credit card. Just use Windows as the offer code at Carbonite, CARBONITE.com. And I know a lot of our listeners are very sophisticated. Perhaps you have already set up a elaborate backup scheme and you don't need Carbonite. But do tell your friends and family about it and tell them about the offer code Windows because this is something, frankly... Anybody listening to this show is backing up, I hope, I presume. But you certainly have friends and family who are not, and you do not want them calling you in tears because they lost. You know, tax time's coming up. I lost my entire financial data. I don't know what I'm going to do. Get them on Carbonite. It is a nice thing to do. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Windows if you decide to buy, and you will get 2 months free. Actually, when you try it, use Windows. Then when you buy, you'll get 2 months free with the purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right. With Carbonite, time for our pick of the week or a tip of the week from Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to just run these on because I have like a tip, but then these are all kind of apps. And as time went by, I kept adding apps. And now there's like 17 different things here. But
good.
I mentioned that Nokia released a bunch of new apps or new, maybe at least updated apps in the wake of Black and that many of them require Black. You don't get them automatically when you install Black, but Nokia has created a blog post that has links to all of those apps. So it's kind of a neat little resource. And so this includes App Folder, Nokia Refocus, Beamer, Storyteller, which I was just playing today. I'll be writing about that one soon. That's a really cool app. And then the new Nokia camera app, which is kind of that combination of the old pro camera and smart camera apps. And so I guess the easiest way to describe to people who want to find this is Nokia has a blog called Conversations at Nokia. It's conversations.nokia.com. And they posted this, I guess, about 2 days ago. But it's the Back to Black app download links post that has those. And, of course, on my site, every time I write about one of these apps, I also include a download link. But this is kind of a nice one because it tells you what each of the apps are. I mentioned very briefly the other moment there that DNG support was part of this Black update on supported phones. That's a raw camera format. So if you're kind of a professional photo taker type, you may want to enable that on your phone. I know it's on the 1020. I think it's on all of the 9X, 9 to whatever dot, you know, phones and possibly some of the other ones. But it allows you to, in addition to saving a JPEG every time you take a photo, you can save a DNG file.
But here's a question. So, is it actually a raw file or just a file in the DNG format?
It's a that's a good question. I actually don't use raw files.
I know of no camera phone that will. What a raw file is just this is the bits off the sensor, unmodified, unchanged. The DNG format is a format that Adobe's been pushing as kind of a independent, because everybody has their own raw format. So when you import stuff into Lightroom, for instance, it'll cover.
I don't know the technical details of it. What I can tell you is that Nokia says that it is a lossless raw file in DNG format.
That's good. Lossless is the word.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah. It is the Nokia Lumia 1520 and 1020 are the only smartphones in the market that support raw.
Yeah. So they do. That is pretty dang impressive.
So concurrently with Black, I don't know who would have released this. I guess it would have been Adobe. Let me look. Yeah. Adobe has released support for this raw DNG format for Lightroom. And so if you're a professional photographer, you might use Lightroom as well. And now you can use that in conjunction with your Nokia smartphone.
That's reaching out to the pros out there. That's interesting. Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of people looked at the 1020 in particular and said, you know, this camera makes the most sense for professional photographers. And I sort of approached it from the other side where I thought, you know, to be honest, I think this phone is better for anyone and that they can take better pictures with it. And if they want, they can spend the time to learn how all those controls work because it has a lot of the kind of, you know, fine tune and manual settings that you get with an actual camera. You don't have to use any of it, but you can. And I kind of like the notion that it can help you become a better photographer, but I guess you could approach it from either direction.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think if you're a pro, you actually have a camera with you.
Yeah.
You're not.
Although I guess, you know, maybe the professional photographer doesn't always bring their, gigantic digital SLR with them everywhere they go. I mean, they could have this in their pocket too.
I just feel like it's good. I'm not saying it's not good. I think if you're really serious about photography, you have even a pocket camera with you as opposed to trying to do it. But I think you're right. It really ups the game for people who don't, you know, carry cameras.
Yeah, and I probably made this observation this summer, but, you know, we brought this camera with us on our vacation to Europe, and I took, 1,500 photos while we were there or something, and those are the best pictures I've ever taken in Europe, and I'm ecstatic about the quality of
neat.
It. So
that's neat.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't use, an SLR, a DS.
Right. No, it's for you. This was done for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was literally for me. Yeah, so if other people enjoy it, I guess I'm happy for them, but I don't really care because it's for me. So as long as I like it, I think it's fantastic. But anyway, so I have a few software picks. Last week I talked about Xbox Music 2.0 for iOS, which added offline support just for playlists. This week they released Xbox Music 2.0 for Android, shocker, and it adds basically the same functionality. It actually has a couple of additional features too, but that's the big one. Offline support. So Microsoft has made the Android version of Xbox Music work the same as the iOS version. So that's nice. Just before we started the podcast, I found out about these two other apps. Nokia announced the winner of their Create Grand Prize, which is an app called Picura, I guess, P-I-K-U-R-A. I haven't used it yet. It looks kind of cool. It appears to be something akin to, you know, the check-in apps we see for things like the beer check-in app, like Untappd or whatever, where people could take pictures and then, you know, compare them to other people's photos. But they also have kind of a gamification element to it where you can participate in contests where they'll have daily challenges where they'll say, okay, take a picture of, you know, this gigantic hamburger or some gigantic hamburger. And then everyone who uses the app will go out and take pictures and then, you know, there'll be a prize or whatever. So that looks like kind of a cool app. And then I mentioned that the Nokia camera app, which is quickly becoming the default app on the high-end Windows phones, there's now a beta version of it that's available for all Windows phone, or for all, I should say, all Lumia Windows phones that are running Update 3 plus Black. So if you can get those updates on even a low-end phone, you'll be able to get a beta version of this app. And I, the way I'm reading this is that this Nokia camera app will become the Windows phone photo app, you know, the camera app going forward. And it's really powerful, even on a kind of a medium quality camera. I think before the release of this version, I think they made it available on, you know, the 920, the 925, some of the other phones. But it's an awesome camera app. And now they're moving it down market. So that's kind of cool. So there's a beta version of that as well.
Nice.
I think that's everything. So, yeah.
So that's your tip and your pick.
Tip and many picks.
Tip and a pick. Which means it's time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes, my Enterprise Pick of the Week is a screen reader for people who are blind, visually impaired, or print disabled. It's called Window-Eyes. And what's pretty cool about this is Microsoft teamed up with a company called GW Micro, and they are offering a free version of this screen reader for people who are who have Office 2010 or Office 2013. And you can just go to the site and download this for free and use it with the licensed copy of Office. It also supports Server 2012, 2008 R2, 2008 and 2003 Windows Server. And there's a paid version of this program that you can buy through GW Micro that has more functionality and features. But if you just want to get the free one and use that with Office, it's right there. Download link, no catches, no tricks. You can use it right now. So it's pretty
nice. Great. Good on them. That's great. And your code name of the week is a place I'd like to go.
Yeah, my code name of the week is... I'm doing a kind of a backwards thing here. So my codename pick of the week is Reykjavik.
No, Reykjavik. Am I pronouncing Reykjavik?
Reykjavik. Reykjavik. Right. I pronounce it wrong every time. Reykjavik, capital of Iceland.
Yes.
Is the codename. So here's the trick on this codename. I know this is a codename that Microsoft has. I know it's a codename for something that the Windows Azure team is building, and I have absolutely no idea what it is. So I'm asking you listeners, if anybody knows, to help me figure this out. And the way this codename came to be, which is pretty funny, is somebody on the Azure team said, we should let Mary Jo Foley name one of our codenames.
No.
Because she's always trying to break our codenames. So they said, Mary Jo, what do you want to codename something? And I said, Reykjavik. And they said, okay.
You picked a name you couldn't pronounce?
Yes, I did. And you know why I picked that?
Why?
I picked it because it'll be easier to search for.
Oh, you're right.
That's funny.
You're right. So, I thought maybe Creek Lambic, but okay, Reykjavik. Okay.
Right, I was thinking like hops or something.
No, it's not related to beer or hops. But yeah, so if anybody out there knows, I hear it's NDA, so you can pass me a little private note.
So they said you can name it, but we're not going to tell you what it is.
Right.
That's so funny.
Right.
That is great.
It's something on Azure. Something having to do with Azure. I'm guessing, just a wild guess, it's going to be some infrastructure kind of thing, like, you know, how they did Service Bus, which is a messaging infrastructure. There's going to be something very low level like that. That's just my guess, though.
Let's hope, though, that they don't do a lot of Icelandic code names. Because
I know, because they're so hard to pronounce.
Reykjavik is the easiest.
What is was it the, really?
Wow. Remember the Icelandic volcano?
Right. Shut down flights to Europe. And
no one could pronounce it. We even had Icelanders call us.
Oh, wow.
And say, yeah,
we don't know.
I've heard different.
It's like 13 consonants in a row and our tongue just locks up. Yeah. You know?
Oh, man.
Here's from NPR. The NPR announcer is going to attempt to pronounce it. It's spelled EYJAFJALLAJOKULL. It's a volcano in Iceland.
The Eyjafjallajökull volcano.
What was that?
So let's. I want Microsoft to use that. You should have really punked them.
I should have said that. That would have been way easier to search for. Wow. Okay.
That's good.
So, could have been worse.
Let's try this one.
That's crazy.
The eruption of Eyjafjallajökull is not.
That's not right.
The Eyjafjallajökull volcano.
That's close enough.
All code names should be in Icelandic from now on. The new CEO is going to enforce that, I believe. Just a thought. And your beer pick of the week?
My beer pick of the week, because I haven't picked a wheat beer in forever, is the Dreamweaver Wheat from Trogues Brewing in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I picked it because it's a really good example of the style, wheat beer, Hefeweizen.
I love Hefeweizen,
Yeah, it's just so easy to drink and nice. Banana, clove, all the things that are so tasty. And also fairly low alcohol, so it's very sessionable, as they say. You can drink a lot of them and still be coherent. Not like those wheat wines that I've been drinking this winter. Yeah.
There's wheat wine?
Wheat wine. It's like barley wine. They call it barley wine or wheat wine. Okay. Yeah. Those are the like 12 and 14%. This is a little 4.8%. Wheat beer.
It's like a starter beer.
It is. Like a starter beer. But it's so good. And last night at Rattle and Hum, it was Trogues night. So they had all kinds of Trogues on, including this one. And it's always, always a plus, always a pleasure to drink it.
Yeah. Nice. This is Dreamweaver. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Windows Weekly is brought to you each week at this time by Gary Wright, the Dreamweaver, and of course
by Soul Train. Hey, someone sent me a chat or I guess a forum post from Chromium about this non-standard UI issue.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, many, many complaints. But according to Chromium, there was a big
Chromium
change
is
in the graphics
open,
stack.
It's the open source version, and it is not a project specifically owned by Google, but I think many Googlers work on it.
So I guess the change in the graphics stack between the previous version of Chrome and the new version was meant to unify Windows, Chrome OS, and Linux.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that unification includes a shared widget theme.
Yeah.
And they knew that this was going to upset some people and respect that, but decided to go ahead because many sites already customize the scroll bars, which doesn't explain the other controls. And Internet Explorer in Windows 8 already has a non-classic widget theme. So, that justifies
Microsoft did it, so we're going to do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Also hearing from a lot of people on Twitter that we may be wrong about the idea that Firefox or Chrome could run on the Surface RT ever because of different things that Microsoft prevented in terms of them not being able to install a desktop version and a Metro version simultaneously.
Interesting.
So that may
that
be
alone
futile.
Makes RT so much less interesting. Yeah. No, it really does.
Well,
right? I mean, what percentage of stuff do you do on a tablet or computer that's
web-based? Yeah, it's all browser.
You know what? If they would just make IE 11 work better on my Surface RT, I would be okay with limited to one browser.
Yeah.
Dream on, little Dreamweaver.
Dream on, I know.
Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. She breaks news every single day. It's a must-read. Paul Thurrott's super site for Windows, same thing, winsupersite.com. And, of course, Paul's got the books. He's got the Windows phonebook.com and the new zunemusic.com. No, sorry, xboxmusic.com.
I don't actually have that website, but you can go to WinSuperSite has that one.
Okay.
The link
will be there. And we do this show, as I have said now, three times on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC on twit.tv.
And I think by February, March, we should be getting used to that schedule. Yeah. So
how's it feel for you?
It's a little weird.
It's weird.
Because I always feel like my week is going to end tomorrow.
Yeah.
Me too. Same thing. Yeah.
And it's going to make Fridays tough for a while.
Yeah, no, I have the same thing. Amen. My whole week has been rejiggered because this isn't the only show. We moved quite a few shows, and it's very odd, but I'll get used to it. We never moved. We did this show on Thursdays for, 7 years? So it's a big deal to move it. But I appreciate your flexibility. Thank you. And my dogs do too. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Theroux, thank you. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.